You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm your host, John Kuh. We are going to be starting our off-season episode series where we're basically going to be interviewing pitcherless writers. And the first writer that we get to have the honor of talking to this week is Martin Sokolsky of Pitcher List. He's been on the show before, but Martin, for those who haven't listened to your previous episode when you were on the show, or maybe you've read your work on Pitcher List, could you give a quick intro, or maybe just just an introduction of who you are and kind of the things that you're interested in the fantasy baseball space?
Yeah, appreciate you having me on again. I've been with Pitcher List now for just over a year. Really focused on the dynasty space, writing a little bit of everything, prospects. I do dynasty rankings, top 350 every month as well, in addition to different reports based on division. So AL East was my particular division for prospects this year. Whatever Matt Heckman, the dynasty guru, has in store for us, I just kind of go with the flow. I like to write about all things fantasy baseball related, not just prospects. So I'm excited to talk about my most recent article. So.
Yeah, for sure. And big shout out for writing those dynasty ranking articles, because I know those are not easy, trying to put together the top 350 players of dynasty. I'm sure the three guys we're going to talk about today probably bounced around your rankings quite a bit this season. But before we get into it, it is the day before the World Series when we were recording this. So I kind of have to ask you, what's your take? Who you've got in the World Series, Dodgers versus Yankees?
So this one's it's painful for me. So I'm a Red Sox fan. So yep. Obviously, I can't cheer for the Yankees in any way, shape, or form. But the Dodgers also have Mookie Betts, which still hurts too. I just want both teams to have fun. No, I'm just kidding. I really think that it's just going to come down to pitching. Whether the Dodgers can string together enough quality outings, being down so many starters that they are, and whether the really good versions of Gerrit Cole and Carlos Rodon show up for the Yankees. So it's going to be fun. There's a lot of star power between Otani and Judge and Soto and Betts. And there's just so much going on, so many dynamic players. So it'll be a lot of fun, and really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat where it's like I could never root for the Yankees. And the Dodgers feels like, maybe the less evil team to be rooting for. But I am a big Shohei fan, so it'd be nice to see him get a World Series ring. I am rooting for specifically Shohei to close Game 7, though. If that could happen, if Dave Roberts, you could make that work out, I'd be a big fan. So
that would be like the ultimate mic drop for the entire season. If Shohei can close down the ninth inning, that'd be just incredible.
Exactly. All right. Well, before we get into the interview, just a reminder to all the listeners that you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL. You can send us your fantasy baseball questions at our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. And just make sure you subscribe or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to. We're on all of them, so just make sure you follow us and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. Now, we're going to get into the interview, and Martin, your article, pretty meaty one, and I think the right length for kind of the topic that we're talking about. The article we're talking about is how high is too high for the Jackson 3, specifically talking about the three Jacksons: Jackson Merrill, Jackson Trujillo, and Jackson Holliday. And we've talked about them on the podcast plenty of times this year. Specifically more so Jackson Merrill and Jackson Trujillo with the incredible seasons that they've had. Just a really good article in terms of the analysis, and kind of these three guys are definitely high value picks in fantasy next year, not just in redraft, but obviously their dynasty values is huge as well. But before we dive deeper into these three players, just for starters, which of these three seasons was more impressive to you out of these three guys?
Yeah, so I saw that as one of the talking points tonight, and I really thought long and hard about it, but for me, it's still Jackson Merrill. There's just so many different factors involved. When you consider that he'd only had 83 plate appearances above single A or high A, and never appeared in triple A. And then you know, he came out as a rookie and he hit 292 with a 500 slug, a strikeout rate under like, I think it was like 17%, which is just crazy. Mm-hmm. And then if you really look at his and dive deep into what he did, I mean, if you take out March, which there's a relatively small sample for March, 18 at bats, he never hit below 260 in any month, which is completely insane. In June and July and August, he had an OPS over 900 in each month. I mean, he did a little bit of everything. And the other thing that's even more remarkable about what he did was that he transitioned to center field full time. I mean, he was an outfielder for 5 games in his entire career entering 2024 and finished 97th percentile for outs above average as a center fielder. He really just did everything for them. And then really when you look in at the clutch factor, which people can say what they want about clutch hitting, he was it. I mean, he hit 322 with 7 home runs and an 859 OPS in the 8th inning or later. And he had that crazy run in 12 days where he hit 4 game tying home runs in the 8th inning or later, which is just absurd when you think about it. I mean, we're talking David Ortiz in the playoffs for the Red Sox, kind of a run that he went on. Mm-hmm. And the previous record for that was 4 home runs in 52 days. So consider the fact that he did it in 40 less days is just absolutely insane. He was fantastic. And honestly, he should be the clear-cut Rookie of the Year winner from the National League. And he realistically should finish in the top 10 in MVP race, if not higher. So definitely Jackson Merrill.
Yeah, I think with Merrill too, it was surprising because coming into the season, no one was expecting him to necessarily crack the opening day roster. Even just crack the opening roster as a starter, right? Like you mentioned, just 83 plate appearances above high A. He was kind of in, you know, spring training for the Padres as just kind of, you know, the guy that you call up, your top prospect, just to get some reps. And then all of a sudden, like, he's their opening day center fielder, which I think is insane for a guy who, like you mentioned, did not have that many opportunities to play in center field in his career. So definitely super impressive. Just diving into Jackson Merrill a little bit more, I guess I should specify that for this interview. You know, his overall stat line for the year, 24 homers, 16 stolen bases, 90 RBI, 77 runs. Like you mentioned, you already had the 292 batting average, that 500 slugging, just incredible numbers across the board. I think probably what was most impressive looking at his stats in the past few years was that he wasn't necessarily like this prolific power speed combo guy. I think the most he had in the season was, or most he had at like a single level was like 10 homers and 10 steals, I think, in high A or something like that. So that being said, where do you think Merrill's potential ends up lining up? Is he a guy who could potentially reach that, you know, 30-20, maybe even 30-30 sort of plateau? Or is this kind of what we would expect out of Merrill, where he's like mid-20s and mid-teens for his homer stolen base potential?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. I was looking at the article again before we hopped on here, and I saw a comment from one of the readers that kind of said that I was underselling Merrill. And, you know, he very well could be right. I think it's within the range of possibilities that he finishes, you know, with 30 home runs and 20 steals. Everything that he did was supported by his data. I mean, all of his expected stats completely supported the success he had this year. He did have the 24 home runs, like you mentioned. All of his batted ball data has always been really good in the contact range, like in the realm of contact. Like you said, the power really didn't come. And it's intriguing that he did finish with so many home runs, because obviously we talked about the contact rate being very high, 85.8% zone contact rate, which is really impressive, especially for a rookie. Like I talked about earlier, the 17% strikeout rate is very low for a rookie. But he had an 11.3% barrel rate, a 44% hard hit rate. His EVs were really good. I mean, 90.4 average with a max of 111.6. That's pretty good batted ball data for a rookie. And if you really look at it, I think what's even more impressive is that he had kind of a weird distribution on the spray chart, where he was 32% to the pull side, but then he went 41.8% straight away. And so ended up with 14 of his 24 home runs that were straight away or to the opposite field, which is a really impressive number. And really, I just wonder if he could tap into it more, if he can just change that approach. I was looking at some data on Petco Park. It really just plays below average in general for left-handed hitters.
Yeah.
So obviously what he did there is even more impressive. I think he had 13 of his 24 home runs in that park. It's just really solid. There are some things that could get in the way of that moving forward. His chase rate is still super high. It was like 34.4%. He's super aggressive early in the count, which paid off at times, but also, you know, can lead to some easy outs. And given his ability to make contact, I really think it would be beneficial for him to work deeper into the count. And if you really look, he had a walk percent or walk rate under 5%, which is really low. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I think if he can really harness what he's doing and continue to produce the exit velocities that he's doing, I think there could be more power. But again, I really am intrigued to see how he progresses with his spray chart and being able to come to that pull side power more.
Yeah, I mean, the important reminder, obviously, is that Merrill is 21 years old, right? There's still plenty of time for him to grow. And plenty of time to grow both physically and mentally, right? And that kind of just developing that power, but also developing that plate discipline. I think one of those stats that's super interesting, and you kind of briefly mentioned, is that even though his chase rate's like 34%, his strikeout rate's 17%, which is, I think that's an interesting sort of disparity between those two statistics. And like, what would you kind of attribute to that? Like, is it good plate discipline kind of in the latter half of an at-bat, or is it just if it's just like maybe dumb luck that's just the way it worked out for him?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you have the ability to make contact the way that you do, especially at that high of a clip, even if it's just in zone contact, which is going to be easier to make than obviously contact on chase. I'm just pulling up the number here on his chase contact. So his ozone contact, or he was still at 66.4% out of the zone, which that's a pretty decent number. There's guys that don't make 66% of contact in the zone. So it could be a little dumb luck, but at the same time, when you've got the bat to ball skills that he's got and being able to find the barrel consistently, it's just one of those things where talent just always prevails regardless of the scenario. So as he gets older, maybe it'll improve. I'd like to see a walk rate get higher, especially for fantasy purposes. Especially for his stolen base potential as well. But ultimately, when you're making that much contact, there's a lot to build on there.
Yeah, a 292 average is definitely nothing to sniff at. So it's really impressive that he's doing that as a rookie, you know, nearly batting 300. And yeah, I was just looking at his contact ability on our PLV stats. Like, he was pretty much well above MLB average for most of the season. And like in kind of hovering at that 80th to 90th percentile, which is really impressive for, again, a guy who's 21 years old. All right. Well, moving on to his National League counterpart, Jackson Trujillo, who again is very much in that NL Rookie of the Year race. Although it sounds like in your opinion, it's pretty much a done deal that it should be Merrill. Trujillo's interesting in that he had that huge contract, right, that he signed with the Brewers, 8 years, $82 million, that he signed last December. Basically, Brewers just saying, like, yeah, this guy is our guy. He is going to be on the opening day roster. And it didn't look great initially. He did have some early season struggles, but like you mentioned in the article, after the All-Star break, he basically took off. Even a little bit earlier than the All-Star break, like June 1st really is when the numbers really all seemed to work for him. What were some of those underlying batted ball metrics that you liked in that kind of hot streak that Trujillo had that pushes Trujillo to potentially become like a top 20 asset in Dynasty?
Yeah, so I think the big thing to remember with Trujillo is he's a player that's kind of historically struggled initially at every level that he's been at and then just kind of busted out once he figured it out. So if you look back at his AA season in 23, he played with that pre-tech ball down in the Southern League and Texas League, hit 253, had a lot of strikeouts in the first part of the season. And then once that kind of that pre-tech ball went away and he adjusted, he really took off. He had an 823 OPS down the stretch there, cut his K rate down to 14%. So it's a similar story to what we saw early in the season with him, from opening day until May, his exit velocity was around 87. Hard hit rate was 42%, not a lot of barrels. And then once he started getting hot and adjusting in June, he had a 90.1 mile per hour exit velocity, 46% hard hit rate and 27 barrels. And that's really where he kind of took off, was on that. He had a hit streak that I mentioned. I think it was 12 games sometime in June.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that really is what kind of propelled him moving forward. And the nice thing about Churio is he's really improving in the areas that people questioned as he was coming up as a prospect, specifically against breaking balls. He hit 275 this year against breaking balls with a 43% hard hit rate. That's pretty impressive for him, especially given the struggles he's had in the minors with that particular type of pitch. With that said, there were some things that aren't great. He has a 48% ground ball rate, which is concerning. He's always had a big ground ball rate in the minors, but he's also had a fly ball rate that was kind of evened out. So, but his fly ball rate was only 31% this year compared to around 35, between 35 and 39% in the minors. So I like to see him lift the ball a little bit more. He's only got a 7.6 degree launch angle, which is pretty poor. So hopefully that'll kind of fix. And the other thing too, is he's kind of similar to what Merrill's going through, and he's normally pull side, well, more pull side power, but he was also going straight away. And so I'm wondering if he can tap into more power as well, if he can get into that pull side, just like Merrill. It's going to be a lot of fun watching these guys develop as they get older. I mean, like you said, they're only 21 years old. And Churio is actually the youngest of the three, which is even crazier. But he's in a favorable hitting park at American Family Field. They rank really highly for right-handed power. So I think it'll all come together for Churio. And I think he's got the highest ceiling of all three of these players. And I don't really think it's particularly close. But it's just how he continues to adjust now that he's kind of figured out the big leagues a little bit. Now pitchers are going to go back and adjust on him starting this year coming up. And we'll see how he responds and continues to be productive, hopefully. So,
yeah, with Churio, it's maybe a little bit different than Merrill, that like Merrill didn't have a ton of success in the minors. I mean, relatively speaking, right? He still was pretty solid in the minors. But Churio was truly like, you know, that number one prospect, right? His 2023 season, just in double A, 22 homers, 43 steals, 80 plus runs in RBI at that level in 120 games. So clearly, like, there was something to really like about Churio's game. And it almost seemed like you mentioned this, it's almost like his power kind of under-delivered a little bit in the majors, right? Like, there could have been another gear that he might have been able to get to. And again, he's just 20, 21 years old, so there's still plenty of time for him to get there. But clearly, he's probably the fastest out of the three, I'd say, as well.
Absolutely.
And, like, you know, the power for sure is there. 105 90th percentile EV, you know, good, really solid numbers there. 111 max EV, which is pretty much exactly where Merrill was at. So a lot of potential in that, where, I mean, it basically sounds like he feels like a guy who's more likely to get to a 30-30 season, like in early in his career, than maybe Merrill is able to get to.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Churio's got the loudest tools of any of the three that we're going to talk about tonight. Mm-hmm. The one tool that he doesn't compare to with both Merrill and Jackson Holliday, who we'll talk about sooner, is the hit tool. Churio's hit tool is just not quite there. Doesn't mean he's not going to be successful, because obviously we've seen the success already.
Yeah.
He's just not as developed as a hitter yet as the other two guys are, despite what Holliday's struggles were. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, still a 275 batting average, which I'll take that from a rookie any day. So, and I think, you know, probably more impressively, just really good numbers across the board. And he's on a team that, both these guys, Merrill and Churio, are really good team context, right? The Brewers, top three team in the National League this year, were competing for the pennant for most of the season. San Diego obviously got a lot of stars there. For sure, they're always contending with the Dodgers for the NL West crowd. So really all three of these guys, even Holliday, right, all are on great team context, surrounded by good vets, and aren't necessarily expected to come in and save the organization, which right. I think helps in terms of, you know, in terms of their mental state when they're playing. All right. Well, let's talk about Jackson Holliday. You know, the number one pick a couple of years back, a lot of hype, obviously his dad, Matt Holliday. And he was the one that didn't start on opening day for the team. So he came up a little bit later and let's just say it just wasn't that great, right? It was pretty disappointing of a season out of Holliday. And, you know, he was a guy who was getting drafted in redraft leagues, I remember, last season. You know, people were willing to stash him for a couple weeks because, you know, we all knew he was probably going to come up and had a feeling like maybe this guy can be like a top 10 shortstop in the majors in his first season. Wasn't that. Wasn't nowhere near that, right? Looking at his year numbers, 10 homers, 8 stolen bases. Did have 75 runs, so, you know, was able to show some of the production there, but only 38 RBI, batted 271. Right. The stats didn't look great, but ultimately, what did you like from Holliday throughout this entire year, you know, seeing what he did both in the majors and kind of maybe how he grew in AAA as well?
Yes, I think the biggest thing that came through with Jackson Holliday was just his maturity. You mentioned earlier about not necessarily having to be the savior of the organization. And while that's true that none of the three of them necessarily had to be, I kind of feel like Holliday was viewed as the next great thing, even with Gunnar and Adley both there. Mm-hmm. I think Holliday had that expectation. And he's been dealing with this his whole life, right? I mean, son of a major leaguer. Number one prep player in the country at one point, number one prospect in baseball, number one draft pick. I mean, this is a kid that has, as I mentioned in the article, he's been a star since before he could drive. I mean, and we all know about the Holliday Baseball Factory. We see their videos on YouTube and all the social media with him doing the home run derbies with dad. And this kid has been in the spotlight for a long, long time. And I think that he really, I mean, he was bad when he came up. Don't get me wrong. He was really bad. And then when he went back to AAA, he struggled pretty bad as well. But he really showed that maturity, being able to come back. And he still wasn't great in the second half when he came back up, but at least he was serviceable. He still looks like he's 21 years old. Mm-hmm. Well, as a player, he looks like he's 21. Physically, he looks like he's about 12.
Yeah.
That's a baby face, but it's so funny watching him, but he did well. I mean, considering how bad everything started, he could have just crumbled and went away for the year and started over this year. But he did have like a weird little IL stint in the minors in June. I'm starting to wonder if maybe there was more strategy to that than actual injury. He really struggled when he went back down. And I think they just needed to get his confidence back, give him some time away, get that mental side of things back and together. And then once he came back in the big leagues, I mean, he started to kind of put it together. He had almost a 90-mile-an-hour exit velocity. He had the 5 home runs and 6 extra base hits. And plus, he started to run a little bit too, which kind of shows you that he's starting to settle in with all that. So I think that Holliday is going to be fine in the long run. I don't have any concerns about that. Obviously, there was a big strikeout rate. I think he was at like 33%, which is crazy. But when you look at the numbers, Churio's breakout started after 160 at-bats. Holliday only had 180 at-bats in the majors. And he kind of started to figure it out toward the end there, right? So maybe he's in that adjustment period as well. So it just was a down year in general for him. His contact rate was way down, even in the minors. His production level was way down. And he really started off hot too in the minors. So that kind of shows you how much that stint in the majors really impacted him once he went back down. But ultimately he figured it out, and I think he's going to be fine in the long run.
Yeah, all three of these guys are power speed combos, which is, again, not surprising for guys who, you know, came up as shortstop, center fielders, you know, young players. But Holliday, for him, like, the speed is clearly there. I think the home run production is what you kind of pointed to as, like, maybe not exactly at the same level as Merrill and Churio. How do you think that power ends up developing for Holliday? Is he a guy who could be hitting, you know, getting to 30 homer seasons in the future? Or is that something that's maybe a little bit less possible for him?
Yeah, that's one of the topics that's really been kind of hanging over Holiday's head as a prospect. Even, I mean, we know that he's an elite athlete. We know that the hit tool's there. We know that the pedigree is there. He's got that baseball IQ, those intangibles that you just can't teach. Mm-hmm. But yeah, where's the power going to be? I mean, he's not overly big. I mean, he's like 185 pounds. He's only like 6 foot tall. He gets to hard contact, but ultimately, is that going to translate to the home runs? I'm not sure. Playing in Baltimore isn't going to help either.
Right. Yeah.
But I think that if he can get to kind of where Merrill was at this year, like around the 25 home runs, I think that that would probably be where he would peak at for home runs. But I don't know when that happens. He could turn into his dad and bulk up and be a monster physically. But who knows? Who knows really how the power will play up. But I think, like I said, if he can get to, 20 home runs consistently, I think he's going to be a really productive player for fantasy. So,
yeah. And, you couple that with maybe 20, 30, maybe 40 stolen bases, and that's a very productive guy on your team, which I think most managers would take. So looking at all three of these guys, just in general, Trio and Merrill are kind of jumping up draft boards. Holiday's a little bit slower, which makes sense. Obviously, he had less than 200 at bats at the majors. He probably is starting the season with the Orioles. We'll see what they end up deciding. Obviously, it's we've got 6 months to wait here, but he probably isn't going to be very high in the order there. So notably, his ADP is lower, but we do have, somehow, even though the World Series are going on, we do have NFBC data because people are still doing draft champions for next season. I know the podcasters over at Pitchlist, we're in a mock draft right now. So yeah, the sickos are still giving up some data. But the numbers on Churio and Merrill are insane in terms of their ADP. Churio right now has got an ADP of 22. Merrill's got an ADP of 35. Holiday's got an ADP of 204. So, yeah, a lot farther down than the other two. But of those three guys, who do you like most at their ADP? Like, who do you like most do they feel like guys who should be drafted where they are currently?
Yeah, so in complete transparency, I'm one of those sickos. I've already completed one draft champions. And I'm actually in like the fifth round of the next one. So I am a certified sicko. With that being said, Merrill, he's gone 33 and 29 in my drafts. Churio's been 20 and 22. Mm-hmm. And then Holiday went 196 in the first draft, but he hasn't gotten picked yet in the last draft. I don't know. I'm really okay with all of them at their ADP. Yeah. But ultimately, what I think is going to happen is I think that the most logical answer is going to be Holiday.
Right.
And so I guess just focusing on one player at a time. So with Merrill, he finished 28th last year on the player rater with Razzball. And we know that, growth and development isn't linear, especially for young players. Mm-hmm. But I feel like he's going to rebound and really put together a similar season to what he's had this year. Whether that turns into enough value to warrant, a second round pick, or a third round pick, which is where he's at, kind of remains yet to be seen. But I feel comfortable with him with an ADP of 35. But at the same time, I think that ADP is going to rise as we get further along. I mean, yes, the sickos are going, but there's still some apprehension with mm-hmm. the couple of different players that we really don't know what's going to happen. So I think it's going to rise at some point. With Churio, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but this is probably the last chance you get Churio anywhere outside of the first round.
Okay,
yeah. I think 2025, when we start drafting it this time next year, I think he's going to be a top 10 pick or higher, just based on what he's capable of doing. And honestly, he could push up even further this year. Right now, ADP 22. I don't think he gets into 15 range, which would be first round range in most leagues. Mm-hmm. But I think he's going to push into the teens for sure. But I don't have shares of any of the three of them so far. And I'm probably going to be priced out on Merrill and Churio both, just because of their current cost, just because there's so many options in that range. And then with Holiday, I don't know that we saw enough in 2024 that clearly shows that he's going to have a clear path to playing time next season. Mm-hmm. I think it's still in the, you know, range of possibilities that he starts next year at AAA and maybe gets that late April, early May call up like he did this year. He may break camp too. Who really knows? But ultimately, his value at 204 is going to be really nice. It's probably going to go up a little bit. I'm thinking probably in the 180s, and it could jump even higher as we see, you know, get toward March, and maybe it's clear that he's going to break camp, and then he'll just push up. But I think at 204 right now, there's a better chance of him returning a big profit on his value compared to the other two guys.
Yeah, I was just looking up some stats on players who are similar to Churio, because the, you know, the idea of him being a first round talent is, I mean, it's real, right? If everything works out for him, it is real. I was just looking at J-Rod's first season: 28 homers, 25 stolen bases, batted .284 with a .509 slug. Like, not Churio obviously wasn't at those numbers this past year, but you could see him reach those for sure. He had 21 homers, 22 stolen bases, just a few behind. The average similar-ish, .275, .464 slug. And yeah, if he improves, right, that is probably first round value, which I think is kind of crazy to think about right now. But these young guys, man, they are insane.
Yeah, and Churio, in the one league that we finished, Churio went, like I said, he went 22nd in this league, but he went ahead of like Jaron Duran, Bryce Harper, Freddie Freeman, Rafael Devers, Trey Turner, Matt Olson. So that's a pretty meteoric rise for a guy that was an ADP. I think it was like around like 150 last year at the beginning, and then he pushed up like inside of like the top 100. But like I said, I really feel like this is the last year where you're going to be able to get him outside of first round cost. So.
Yeah, well, that's exciting. yeah, so we'll see how the Rookie of the Year race kind of wraps up between Churio, Merrill, and, of course, the other guy that we're not going to talk about right now, but the pitcher, obviously. And, yeah, it's obviously Holiday. He's probably not eligible for the American League Rookie of the Year race next year, right? He's had too many at-bats.
Yeah, that's weird. Neither, it's going to be weird because neither him nor Junior Caminero is going to be eligible, which is...
Yeah,
the way the Rays played that was just completely backwards. And ultimately, I think if Holiday hadn't struggled the way he did, he probably would have stayed up the rest of the season and would have been in contention for it. Ultimately, we don't know, coulda, woulda, shoulda, but their intention was right, getting him up with a chance to win the award. So
right, yeah. I mean, we were handicapping the American League race in our last episode, and geez, the American League rookies just pale in comparison to the National League ones. So it was like, yeah, you're choosing between Skeens, Churio, and Merrill. All three of those guys would be easy contenders for Rookie of the Year any other season, but unfortunately, they all decided to have their first season all with each other. So that,
but wasn't it really fun though? Race. It was so much fun.
Oh, it was a great race. Yeah. My money is still on Skeens, but I think, yeah, Merrill and Churio to me are very well deserving of the award if they get it. So,
yeah.
All right, well, Martin, thanks for coming on the show again. Definitely check out Martin's articles, because we barely touched the surface of his analysis on these three guys. Anything that's coming out for you over this offseason? Any articles that you're working on, or any big rankings that you'll be releasing soon?
Yeah, so we're going to be super busy this offseason, Pitcher List. We're always putting out quality content throughout the year, regardless of in-season or out-of-season. Matt Heckman, our dynasty manager, has got tons of good article ideas coming out. I've got my next article actually comes out tomorrow. It's going to be 3 overvalued dynasty players, so check that one out. But yeah, there'll be rankings going on throughout the offseason. My Substack, I'll have stuff as well. But yeah, we're gonna do deep dives on all 30 teams with prospect lists. We're gonna start building toward opening day, and it'll be a lot of fun this year at Pitcher List. So if anyone's coming out to First Pitch Arizona, make sure you stop and say hi to the Pitcher List team. I'll be out there with Nick and Miles and all the guys. So if anyone's out there, want to come say hi, we'd love to talk to you. And thanks for reading our content over at PitcherList.
Yeah, I think off-season is kind of like just the entire off-season is just Christmas for the Dynasty team. It feels like it's so you guys fun. Are pumping out articles, and it's a lot of fun to read about guys who, I'll be honest, I just have never heard of. And then it's just like, oh, okay, this says is a guy I'll keep an eye out for, like, you know, for my own Dynasty League. And if he's a pickup, that's worth targeting. So
absolutely.
Yeah, appreciate the work you guys are doing. Well, all right. Well, thanks again to Martin. Thanks for coming on the show. We are going to wrap up here. Again, you can find us, the podcast, on This Week PL on Twitter. You can send us your comments and questions at the email that I mentioned. You can find myself on Twitter at TheJohnK. Martin, what's your Twitter if people are trying to find you online?
Yeah, so I'm at M_ski, 22. And then, like I said, you can find me at PitcherList, and everything's linked from my my Twitter. So take a look. Yeah,
definitely check out Martin's stuff. And again, subscribe to the podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else you're listening to your shows. Leave us a 5-star review. And lastly, sign up for PitcherList Plus. You can do so on PitcherList.com, and you could join us in the PitcherList Discord. You can bother Martin with your Dynasty questions. I'm sure he gets a bunch of those coming in every so often. Get advice from all the fantasy experts and writers over there. We've got a lot of stuff coming out this offseason. We are not taking the offseason off. Like Martin said, the Dynasty team's going to be going crazy, and we still have a bunch of redraft stuff that's going to be coming out. So if you're, you know, a sicko like all of us, or you just like talking about baseball, we will have a lot of that for you. But yeah, that's all for this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For Martin and for Lee, I'm John, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.